Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And today we have a very, very special guest. She's a pretty big daytime star, Kim Zimmer, who was on The Guiding Light, and she has written a new book called I'm Just Saying, Three Deaths, Seven Husbands, and a Clone, My Life as a Daytime Diva. How are you?
I'm good. That's a mouthful, isn't it?
It certainly is, and you're laughing already. You know, you read that title, a clone? She was a clone?
Exactly. That's kind of like what I said when they called me into the office and told me they were making me a clone.
I can't.
I was like, that can't be possible.
Did you laugh right away when they said that?
I did, but, you know, the executive producer got upset with me because he was like, I guessed it when he said, so, I want to pitch you this story, let you know where we're going. And I said, what, are you going to clone me? And he was like, how would you know that? And I said, the minute you had Reva freeze her eggs, I knew something was up because it was at the same time that they were cloning Dolly the sheep.
Right. You're a pretty intelligent woman. I can tell that by reading this book. I mean, you have it on the ball.
Thank you.
I mean, obviously.
I hope so.
Obviously, you know,
I'm just a simple girl from Michigan.
But you speak your mind, and how can you not be so, what's the word? I totally lost the word I was going to say. Be moved by that, be impressed by that. The fact that you
you're sweet. Thank you.
But, I mean, that's not easy to do. I mean, it's not everybody on daytime TV who can do that.
Well, they can do it. They just choose not to.
Right, exactly.
You know.
But did you ever fear that you would lose your job by speaking your mind?
I think there were times over the many years of my career that I was kind of, there were moments where I thought, oh, certainly they'll fire me for this, and they didn't.
But you're such a presence. How could they fire you? I mean, I just think how boring it would be without you.
Well, you know, in more ways than one. I think I think my personality entertained the suits as well. So I think they were challenged by me, and I challenged them, you know, to do the best job they possibly could until they were in a position to not do that job very well anymore.
Now, according to the internet, you were on 583 episodes, or 584, I'm not sure which to believe here, of Guiding Light. Does that sound about right?
No, that doesn't sound like enough.
I know, that's what I thought, but I mean, I guess my information's all screwed up, so I don't have.
Well,
I was curious to see how many episodes you were on, because I wanted to throw that.
No, I don't know, because, you know, I was there for, however many years. I mean, from 1983, I left for 5 years from 90 to 95, and I was on just about every day. I was on a lot more episodes than 500.
Right. I knew it had to be more than that. When I saw that, that can't possibly be right.
I mean, when you consider that we're on 5 days a week, there's 365 days in a year, how many days is that, you know? And if I'm working at least 3 days a week, over 28 years, you know, that's got to be more. That's interesting. I've never actually thought to sit down and figure that out. That might be something I'll call my next book that.
How many episodes was it?
5,672.
Question mark. I tried to find it somewhere else, and the only I found 583 and 584, it still sounds ridiculously low. The amount of work she did, how could she possibly only be that? It's got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you have your days off, but yeah. But I mean,
and then my clone work too. So.
Right. Exactly. So there you go. That's even more. That counts as two, right? For each episode. did you have a lot of fun all the years you were on?
Most of the years I was on, yes. I mean, but I think the last year before I left in 1990 was a year that I still had a great deal of fun and I still loved the show, but it was getting boring for me because they were starting to repeat story and they were getting a little tired of the character, and I was having babies and I was spending more time with my TV children than my real children. So I just kind of reevaluated my life, and I'd come home, you know, kind of angry, you know, not angry, but just, you know, tired and bitching. And my husband would say, you know, maybe we should think about not you know, not re-upping your contract and just changing it up and seeing what else is out there for you. And so we did. And I was gone for 5 years. I missed the work in the 5 years I was gone. I mean, I really did. Mm-hmm. When you're used to doing that kind of work, when it's not there anymore, I mean, what I did guest spots on a bunch of television series, but
right,
boy, that was boring work, you know?
Right.
Doing a soap opera is the closest thing to doing live theater, I think. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, is my first love, so.
You can't be a slacker on being a soap opera.
No.
I mean, there's just so much going. I mean, in memorizing dialogue, I don't know how you can possibly memorize. And at one point you said it was 70 pages for.
Yes.
I mean, how do you even begin to memorize that overnight?
Well, the longer you do it, it's a muscle in your brain that gets trained.
Right.
It almost becomes what do they call it? Photographic memory.
Right.
Where when you're trying to remember a line, you can see it on the page of the script.
Right.
You know, and if you ask for a line, like if you're in rehearsal, you ask for a line, you can seriously say to the stage manager, it's on the top of the next page. You're not on the right page. You know, you photograph it in your mind when you study the script.
Right.
You know, I mean, and then when you've been playing the character as long as I did, you can pretty much second guess what they're going to say anyway.
Right.
It's just a matter of plugging in the right words.
Right. Do you have to know what the other actors are saying too, and when they're saying it, and when yours comes in? I mean,
that's when it becomes a problem.
Yeah,
when you have to deal with the other actor and the fact that they have to talk too.
just the fact that you did that all those years. I mean, I'm so impressed by that. And you didn't seem to be one that messed up a lot. I'm sure you had your flubs. Every actor does.
Oh yeah, I mean, there were days when and those are the days, of course, that you do remember. The days when I had a scene once with the actress who was playing Abigail in my Amish storyline.
Right.
And there was a day when we had a scene, and I could not. And the minute you start forgetting lines, you get brain lock,
and your
brain just shuts down. And they had to feed me my dialogue line by line because my brain had shut down. I couldn't remember. And that was when I was younger, when my brain was still,
right.
young.
Right. Oh, you're not. You're still relatively young.
Yes. It's just a number, right?
That's right. That's all. But yeah, I mean, you have such a beautiful smile. And I look at some of the pictures online, and I was watching some of the video from the shows, and it's so much fun to go back and watch all that. Of course, I'm a big One Life to Live fan, too, so you were
on that.
Oh,
great.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Now,
I'm having a lot of fun over there, too.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'd give anything to meet Erica Slezak. I think I'd probably...
Yeah, she's great. She's the best.
Between you and her, I mean, she's just one of those people that fascinates me totally.
Yeah, and she sets the bar very high. You know, she is... I have never seen her not prepared. I've never seen her blow a single line of dialogue ever. You know, and Jerry Verdorn's like that too.
Right, he's on there too.
Ross Marler. I mean, not Ross Marler. There I go. You know, Guiding Light.
Right.
Yeah, not Clint Buchanan. I mean, these people are good.
Yes, they really are. And you think to yourself, well, that's easy to do. It's not. I mean, daytime television is some of the roughest work you'll ever see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the
trenches.
And Susan Lucci being on her show for 40-some years, I think, oh, my goodness. Wouldn't you get tired of it after 40 years?
No, because it's different every day, you know? Every day is a new day, and, you know, they bring new actors in, and you get new life, and you find you have a son that you never knew you had who comes in and is played by a fabulous actor like Tom Belfry, which gives you a whole renewed, you know, life as well. You know, it's those things that keep you going.
Right. You and you had famous people on the show, too. Like Peter Gallagher was on at one point. And,
and that was before my time, I guess.
Hayden Panettiere, who was on Heroes.
Yes.
And I've seen every episode of Heroes. I love Heroes. So there's somebody, and Phyllis Somerville, who was on The Big C and got killed off of The Big C, but that's another great show. And I didn't know she was on Guiding Light at one point, too.
I don't know that. And Calista Flockhart.
Oh, she was. I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, she had just a bit part, but she was there. I mean, there's tons of people who come through the doors of daytime, you know, when they're starting out or they're, I've seen people who, you know, when their film careers are over and they start doing, you know, guest spots on soap operas, it's fantastic.
Right.
I mean, Bruce Weitz is doing a fabulous job on General Hospital now.
Yes.
Remember Bruce Weitz from Hill Street Blues? Yeah.
Right.
Loved him on that show, and it's so much fun to watch him on General Hospital now.
So you actually sit and watch the soap operas.
I do. I have to keep tabs on everyone. I want to see where I'm going to go next.
Now, how much are you on One Life to Live? I mean, do you have
Not much. No, I'm not under contract, which is the way I want it, because that gives me the opportunity to go away. I'm leaving for the month of August and the first week of September to go play Norma Desmond in Sunset Boulevard in Michigan.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to that. And Frank Valentini, the executive producer there, is just, you know, the most fantastic man, the executive producer there. He hates it when I say I'm not available, but he also understands, you know, right, that this is a time in my life that I can finally, you know, go off and do theater. So I maybe once a week, sometimes twice a week.
Right.
You know, I'm basically just Rex's mom now and Shane's grandma.
Right. But it's still
fine. Yeah, and I've been working a lot with Eileen Kristen, who I just adore.
She's on One Life to Live now, too. She used to be on The Ed Tonight, didn't she?
Yep. No, on Ryan's Hope.
Oh, Ryan's Hope, right.
Yeah, she might have been on Edge of Night. You know, people, we get around.
Yeah. But that's okay. It's fun to see you and see where you're going to end up next.
Right.
Did you actually say, I'm just saying, like it is, like you say in the book, is that actually something you say, or did you?
Yes, and now, since it's the title of my book, I always stop myself from saying it because it just seems so ridiculous.
Well, how do you say it? Let me hear you say it.
I'm just saying.
Okay. See, I'm reading the book, I'm thinking, I wonder how Kimberly says that every time we come
over. Yeah, it's more like, you know, I'm just saying. It's like, it may not be true, but I'm just saying.
Right. Did you have a lot of fun writing the book?
I had a ball, and it was very therapeutic for me. I was really angry when the show went off the air, and I had a lot of stuff to get through in my emotional state. And writing the book really, really, really helped. And having my co-writer Laura Morton, she was like a shrink for me. You know, she really pulled the stuff out of me.
Okay.
And then once I purged myself of all the bad stuff, she really said, "Okay, now we're going to turn the corner, and we're gonna find the lightness of this, because we don't want it to all be dark and miserable and gloomy." And she was like, let's find the humor again, and we did that. And of course, then we spent months laughing, you know.
Right. These pictures are just incredible. I love looking at you when you. I mean, you have such a beautiful smile. I mean.
Thank you.
I'm looking at one of the pictures in New York. This is your first apartment in New York. I'm like, is that really her? Is that really?
Can you believe it?
I mean, how do you feel when you look at that picture?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I just, when I see that picture, I can be right back in that apartment. That was my husband in my first apartment, you know, and I look like I'm 15 years old in that picture. I wasn't. I was like 20, you know, I was 21, 22.
Right.
I mean, I was young, but I can still see that apartment. I can still take myself back when we were living in that apartment and being the first apartment in New York City, you know, a girl from Michigan. I mean, I'd lived in San Francisco when I was going to ACT, but to be in New York City and be in our first apartment was really, I can totally be back there. I can even remember sitting on that little cement mushroom at the John Ball Park Zoo, that one of the very first pictures in the book. I remember those days.
Right.
You know, I can remember going to the zoo, you know, and then the weird thing about going and working in the theater that was there when I was much, you know, at 16 years old.
Did you always want to be on a soap opera, or was it something that came along that you, and you just...
I never thought, I was a serious theatrically trained actress, you know,
right.
that was what I was going to do, you know, and I, I was trained at the American Conservatory Theater in San Francisco, where, you know, the thought of doing commercials or soap operas was taboo. You know, it wasn't something, you know, a classically trained actor would ever think of doing. Well, hello, you got to pay your rent.
Right.
And, you know, and it was, those were great jobs, especially for actors in New York, because if you weren't married and you didn't have a family, actors would do soaps during the day and then go off and do theater at night. You know, I never did that because I started having children at, you know, I had my first child at 26. So, you know, I wanted to be home with my babies.
Right, of course. What mother,
you know,
wouldn't? But, I mean,
yeah.
but at the same time, like you said, you have to pay the bills, too. So what
right.
do you do?
Yeah, it was a great job. It was a great gig, you know. That's why we call jobs on soap operas golden handcuffs, because, you know, you're stuck. But you're stuck because it's the best job an actor could have. You know where you're going to be every day. It's a consistent job. You know how many, you know, basically how many days you're going to work a week. There's rarely any location work. You know you're in the studio every day. You have a family of people that become a second family to you. It's great work.
And, you know, people, and there's always people that make fun of soap operas, but you know what? Mm-hmm. Everybody at some point in their life has watched a soap opera. I mean, come on, who hasn't watched a soap opera?
Hello, can I, you know, let me tell you something. What people are watching on nighttime television is soap opera, too.
Right.
Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, any of those nighttime shows. That's the same. The only difference being that they're not on every day. You know, they take 8 days to shoot one episode.
Right.
You know, we did a show every 5 days. You know, we did 5 shows in 5 days.
And you never had a day where you didn't finish a show?
Well, we do now because everything's shot nothing's shot in sequence anymore. It's all shot in, I'm losing words. Whatever sets are up that day,
right.
they'll shoot a week's worth of scenes in that set because they can save money that way. They'll put up one set and they'll shoot all the scenes they need to shoot that set for maybe 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then they'll, instead of putting sets up every day and taking them down every day, which is how they used to do it, you know, and they changed the light grids. They had crews working 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And Guiding, you know, that was expensive.
Guiding Light was a family deal. I mean, it's like losing your family when the show's canceled. I mean,
totally.
I mean, you still can.
Yeah.
You know how to keep in touch with them. I'm sure you still keep
there
in touch with.
There are people that I do still keep in touch with, but yet, you know, there are those in the book. I talk about the, you know, the day we had the meeting in the house in Petack, New Jersey, when they announced that we were being taken off the air, and I talk about sitting next to our senior lighting designer, Tony Girolami, and knowing in my heart that's a man. He lives all the way, you know, in four hours from me. And I looked at him and I thought to myself, this is somebody, when this show goes off the air, I will probably never see him again. You know, and that broke my heart.
Yeah, even an email's not the same. It's not the same emailing somebody
no.
as it is seeing them in person and putting your arms around. And I'm sure you're a hugger. You have to be a hugger the way you're so.
I am a hugger. I'm a kisser, you know. And I'm Monday morning quarterbacked with all of those guys on the set. I mean, I'm a huge football freak. And that was my, you know, Monday mornings at the studios. They, you know, we all found each other and we would, you know, we'd spend 2 hours hashing out all the games that happened on Sunday on the football field.
Do you have any regrets at all? I mean, you don't talk about any regrets, really. I mean, there's some, you talk about your DUI was a regret, I'm sure.
Right.
But
that was a big regret.
But it's great to see how honest you are about it. I mean, you don't hold back on anything.
No.
As far as that's concerned, I mean, you just.
Well, if you're going to write a memoir, you know,
right.
you got to write it.
Right.
You know, that's my feeling. I didn't want to sugarcoat anything, but you know, out of my 56 years, that I'm hoping that DUI is the worst thing that ever happens to me or my family. You know, I mean, I learned a great lesson from that, and I think, you know, I'm a big believer in fate. I think that was meant to happen to me to teach me a lesson that I'm not infallible. You know, and it was a very valuable lesson that I learned, and I'm so grateful, and I thank God every day that, you know, I didn't hurt anyone.
You seem very grateful for things that have happened to you. I mean,
yeah.
You're a very grateful person, and you talk about that in the book, of how
uh-huh.
how lucky you are, and how, but you have a lot of talent, though, too. I mean, you can't stay on a soap opera as long as you have without a major talent.
No. I mean, there are people that do. I won't name any names.
Oh, I was hoping you would. Well, you know, you could
name them on one hand. Out of all the actors who have done soaps, there's like maybe five people that I could say have kept their jobs forever and ever and ever, and really, you know, aren't much good. Aren't really very good.
Well, I always hated when I watched the soap opera, I could see they were reading from a cue card. I always thought that always made me uncomfortable.
In the old days, yeah, that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, even the diehards who used to do everything off cue cards, they've been replaced. They can't afford to pay somebody to run a teleprompter anymore. So people have to learn their lines now, which was a big punch in the gut for a lot of people in daytime.
And it's not like if somebody doesn't know you on, it's not like you can send them home or anything. They have to be there to shoot this show. So
I remember days when our executive producer Paul Rausch did you know, either send somebody home and you know, totally threw a wrench into things if somebody wasn't prepared to work, or they were scheduled to be up first in the morning and out of there, and instead he made them, you know, shoot at the very end of the day. And that meant that anybody who was in those scenes with that person had to wait until the end of the day as well. So, you know,
yeah,
that
Paul,
did happen.
Yeah, he seems like a tough guy. You with the way you describe him, he seems very tough. And he looks tough in his picture.
Yeah, and then, I know. That's the warm and fuzzy. That's Paul B. warm and fuzzy.
you seem to know how to relate to men. I don't mean this in any other way than I'm just saying it. I mean, you seem to relate very well to men.
I said that in the book. You know, I talk about that a lot in the book, that I always had an easier time. You know, I'm a man's girl. I didn't have a lot of girlfriends growing up. All my best buddies in school were guys. You know, I don't know why. I just didn't. What they did had more interest to me. I'd never played with dolls. I rode mini bikes. You know, I had scraped knees and Honda burned into the side of my calf. You know, I mean, that was the kind of kid I was.
Right, you don't seem like the kind of woman that gossips, or you would stand around the studio talking about other people. That doesn't seem like you at all. You just seem very...
No, I mean, there's gossip that you can't avoid because it's in your face, and I talk about the makeup room. I mean, everybody gossiped in the makeup room, but it was all in fun, you know.
Right.
So no, I mean, we had a great group. I mean, when I talk about, you know, the trying to find, you know, dishy stuff to, and my publishers kept saying, we need more dish. I was like, there really wasn't any. You know, there really wasn't any. I mean, everybody had families. You know, people did their work and went home to their families at the end of the day.
But when you signed the contract to do the book, did they want you to? Did they say to you,
yeah,
you want a lot of?
They wanted a lot of gossipy dish. You know, and I wasn't interested in writing that kind of book. And they, you know, they finally understood. And when the pages started coming into them, they were very appreciative, and they very much liked the product that they got. You know, so they backed off of that because that was not the kind of book I was going to write.
Now, this is published by New American Library. I should have mentioned that. It's from New American Library. But I just found myself over the weekend just sitting, reading, enjoying it. I mean, long stretches of time just enjoying your narrative. And it really is. It's very enjoyable to read. And I thank you for that. You made my weekend more enjoyable by writing this wonderful book.
Well, I have to say that my son just said to me the other day, because he's just now reading it. You know, none of the kids ever read any of the pages or anything. I'd read little chapters to him every now and then, but my son finally is sitting down with the book, and I think he's halfway through it now. And he came down this morning and said, I get it now. He said, I just, reading the first, you know, just even the first six chapters, I'm starting to understand. I mean, I know these stories that you're telling in this book. I've heard them before. But to put them in an order, to see how it all fell into place, he says, I get it now. But he called me today after reading the book. He's got his girlfriend. This is the one that's in Pennsylvania right now. He texted me and said, chapter 6, paragraph 3. I gave birth to Max on March 17th, 1986. His birthday is March 19th, 1986. But so that was something I said. That's what I get for not, you know, rereading it 95 times with a fine tooth comb. You know, that was his original due date was March 17th, and I have a really hard time forgetting that. Remembering it that he was the 19th.
Now that, you don't go through this in the book, but take me throughout the life at your height when you were really popular. When did you get to the studio? How long did it take to film an episode, and what happened tonight? I mean, you'd probably have to go right home and study your lines again, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, you got there at 7 o'clock in the morning. You'd rehearse. You'd do a dry rehearsal, which was just, you know, first thing in the morning, no makeup, no hair, no, just with the director. You'd figure out your blocking. Then you'd go and have a, in the early, you know, in the 80s, this was how it worked. It all changed when we got to, you know, speeding things up. But in the heyday, you had that morning rehearsal, which was like, you know, coffee and bagels and running your dialogue. And then you'd go to the studio floor and the cameras would get to do their blocking. So you'd go through your blocking again. So that was another rehearsal. Then you'd go and you'd get hair and makeup. And then you'd go back up to the set when you were, you know, made up and everything, and you'd do a dress rehearsal, a final dress rehearsal. And then if they wanted to change any dialogue or change any blocking, they'd do it after that final dress. And then we'd tape. When we were shooting it in sequence, it could take anywhere from 7 o'clock in the morning until 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 o'clock at night.
Wow.
I mean, it was a long day. And there were days when I didn't get to come home and read, you know, my children bedtime stories, which killed me. But then there were days when if you were in the first set that was shooting, you could be there at 7 o'clock in the morning and be walking out by 10 o'clock in the morning and have the rest of your day.
Right.
You know, so.
But the days you were there late, how did you memorize your lines for the next day? That's what I'm curious about.
Well, you know, it goes back to what I was saying. It was tough for some people, but for me, I really did kind of have a photographic memory. I wouldn't memorize my lines because we had so many rehearsals. I could kind of learn them just by going over them with whoever was in the scenes with me. I would read the script and I would get the gist of how my day was for that day. You know, what my story arc was.
Right.
And then, like I said, it was just a matter of plugging in the right dialogue. And that was easy. You know, and it helped to get your blocking. You know, once you knew where you were moving in the set, it was easier to memorize your lines as well.
It sounds just hearing you describe it though, it makes it sound more difficult. It makes it sound very difficult.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, to you, you've done it so many times, you know how to do it. But I mean, just listening to you say, you got to know where to stand, you got to know where you're moving around the scene, you got to know all your lines, you got to know what line's coming next. That seems
right.
Like a lot of stuff to know.
Yeah, it becomes second nature when you it's scary when you first start doing it, but like I said, when you've been doing it, you know, it took me maybe a year to be comfortable with it.
Now,
but there were days when I first started out with soaps, I would write all my lines out on a yellow legal pad. I'd write them over and over again and learn my lines that way. By rote, you know, just writing them on a legal pad over and over and over again.
Huh, that sounds like a good idea, but that's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of extra work if you're writing it all down. So.
Right, it was. And that's when I realized that it was not the way I wanted to spend the rest of my life learning lines.
I mean, I'm just so impressed by everything that happens. I mean, I know you. To you it's easy because you've done it for so many years, but
right.
I just can't
right.
even imagine doing that day after day after day and not getting
confused.
You
know, that's the first question people ask is, how do you learn all those lines? And it's funny because to a layman, it is something that is, you know, astounding to people that it's on a daily basis that you're learning. How can your mind, you know, take on all, process all of that? And I always say it's like putting a computer chip in. You put it in and then you erase it, you know, and then you erase it so that you can put, I've also always said that if they lost the tapes and we had to redo it over again, you know, like the next day, I'd have to totally relearn the dialogue because you put it in, you forget, you wipe it out. The minute it's taped, you forget it. you know, there are people that come up to me on the street and say, I remember the scene you did with blah, 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 and you did blah, 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 and I don't remember it.
Right.
You know?
And they expect you to remember it.
Yeah, that was hard for me with Laura, my co-writer, too, because she'd ask me questions about storylines because she wanted me to be more specific about things.
Right.
I'd be like, I can't remember. And she'd say, well, if you want to talk about it, you better dig deep and find it, you know? So it was interesting.
Sometimes the fans know more than the stars.
They remember it all. They're incredible.
It is incredible. I mean, I love the part of the book where you talk, I think, what's his name, Chris Bernal?
Yeah, Chris Bernal.
And your baby. I mean, to read that, and I don't want to spoil for anybody who hasn't read it, but it's such a touching scene. I mean, it really happened. And I thought, wow,
yes. That's
so cool.
It totally, I mean, I always loved him, but he was scary. But it totally just, I saw, like I say in the book, I saw a side of him that day that just touched my heart, and I had a totally different opinion of him.
What was the hardest part of the book to write?
You know what? It was what not to write. I had a really hard time editing myself because I had so much, you know, that I'd written, and so the hardest part was editing it, and you know, taking things out that I found really interesting and would be something that I would think fans would want to know. I couldn't. It would have been 9,000 pages long if I'd wanted to keep everything in that I wanted to keep.
Wow, now I'm wondering what those things are. Now you got me curious.
Well, you know, maybe I'll write another book.
I can't wait to read it because now I'm curious. But I mean, you got the. What would happen? Now I'm not asking you to name any names or anything. We're being totally hypothetical there. What would happen if you worked with an actor or an actress you just couldn't get along with? How would that work? Or would you be able to?
Well, you know, I'm trying to remember, this might have been a story that I didn't talk about it, but I think I talked about that somehow miraculously the people that were problems somehow disappeared. You know, they couldn't hack it, you know, and so their characters were written out. There really was only, in my 28 years of doing Guiding Light, there was really only one actor that I ever worked with that I had a hard time tolerating, and I stopped working with them. They you know, they could, I don't know if they didn't get chemistry on screen, so they just changed direction. But within a month, the guy was gone anyway, because there was, you know, there, like you said, it's a family of people, and if you don't jive with the family, somehow, you know, a greater power intervened, and that person either quit or they were released. You know, it was just a weird thing that would happen when somebody just didn't gel with the rest of the cast. I mean, I heard horror stories on other shows. You know, I mean, I know they exist on One Life to Live, but at Guiding Light, we were very fortunate that we all got along. I mean, we all got along, and I do think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we were all family people. You know, we came from good families. We had good families. We all were married. We all had kids. You know, I mean, it was a magical show.
And speaking of family, your husband, I know him from somewhere, and I can't think where I know him from. I saw, as soon as I saw his face in one of these pictures, I thought, I've seen him on something, and I don't know where
he was. He was on One Life to Live years ago, and he was on Edge of Night years ago, and he's done a lot. He did a lot of nighttime television. He was an actor in the 80s.
What was his character name on One Life to Live?
He worked, do you remember the days of Pat Ashley?
Yes, oh yes.
He played Dick Grant, who was her psycho television producer, who, you know, would hide in the wings and, like, steal articles of her clothing, and he was a real psycho freak.
I remember, I was watching at that time. Maybe that's where I know him from. I'm not quite sure.
It could be.
But
They just had him back on. He just did two episodes. If you are a fan of One Life, and if you are still watching, he plays a strip club owner. He just for a gag, they brought him on for two episodes to play this role. And but it's been, like I said, it's been years since he's done a soap, and things move so fast now that he was like, oh my God, this is scary. So that it hasn't aired yet. So I think it's probably in September. They're so far ahead in taping it at One Life, but I think it airs sometime in September.
Yeah, that's great. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
It must be where I know him from, because I remember watching Pat Ashley. Mm-hmm. I remember when her son got hit by a car. I remember Karen.
Right.
I remember Brad and Jenny.
Right.
And all through my watching those things just bring back so many memories. But it must be like that. Do you have every episode you were in on tape?
I have two huge boxes that my mom and dad sent to me when they were moving from Michigan to Florida, and they just didn't have the space to store it all. So they had every episode going back to the Doctors. I mean, they bought their first VCR when I was on the Doctors. You know, those massive VCRs when they first came out.
Right.
They had one. So I have, I have a lot. And I'm sure that you probably can't even see the footage on these things because they're on VCRs. I haven't transferred them yet,
right,
which I need to do, you know.
Wow, that's just pretty. And you actually like watching yourself on TV. I mean, I'm not saying you have an ego, or you obviously don't.
I don't like watching myself. I like watching the show.
Oh,
you know, I was a huge fan of the show Guiding Light.
Well, when you see yourself in those old episodes, what goes through your head?
Well, now I go, oh my God, that was when I was a perfect size 6. Or I can't believe I was ever that small. I can't believe my boobs were ever that little.
Right. Is that really what you think, though?
Yeah. You know, I mean, there is that. I mean, I'm kidding, but you know, there is that. It's like, you know, there are times when I look at those old episodes and I go, wow, you know, times change, and so do people. But now when I watch One Life to Live and I see myself, and you know, I can put up the veil and just try to focus on the work. And I just think, what Frank Valentini has done with One Life to Live is just, I mean, I think the show is so good right now. And I'm happy to be a part of it.
And they're going to go online now after it's off the TV. And what a great idea that's going to be. You think you'll be on one of those?
I hope so. You know, I if they ask, I have no problem with it, because I think, you know, this is the future. I think it's where they're all going to end up. You know, because they just don't have the money to produce these things on network television anymore.
Now let's talk about Michael Zaslow. Now there's a villain to end all villains.
Oh yeah.
By the way, do you consider your character any kind of a villain, or did you think she was more of a always good person?
Oh God, no, she was a bad girl. When I first, you know, 10 years I was on the show, I was, you know, I wasn't a bad girl. I did a lot of bad things, but it was always in the name of love, you know.
Right.
So it wasn't really bad. It was just, you know, every time I did something that was bad, I always said, I'm just misunderstood. You know, I'm not a bitch. I'm just misunderstood. Yeah, I don't think Reva was ever a villain. You know, Echo's a villain. Echo on One Life, she's a villain.
Right.
And I love it. You know, I love that. But Zaslow, Roger Thorpe was a villain. You know, Alan Spaulding was a villain.
Right.
You know.
And but the problem is, when the villains die, it's not as much fun to watch.
Exactly. Exactly. And that became a problem on our show for a long time towards the end, the last 5 years. Everybody became gray. You know, there were no really good people, and there were no really bad people. Everybody was kind of the same. You know, and that becomes a problem.
Do you think that you're either a good soap opera actor or you're not? Or do you think you can learn it and become good?
I've always said that I don't think you can learn how to act. I mean, I don't know what the difference is between being a good soap opera actor or being just a good actor.
Right.
There is no difference. So I guess to answer your question, if you if you're a bad actor, you're going to be a bad soap opera actor.
You're going to be bad no matter what you're doing. It's going to be
bad. Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, all of us have watched movies or TV shows where there's just bad acting. And, you know,
right.
it's embarrassing to watch.
Yes.
And it's a shame. But.
And there is some bad acting on a lot of, not just daytime shows, but, you know, like you said, on, you know, you can see it. You can see when it's bad and when it's good.
Right. What would you do differently, knowing everything you know now? Are there one or two things you would go back and change now?
Well, you know, I always say I stayed too long at the fair. You know, I kept those golden handcuffs on my wrist, but the minute I say that, I want to take it back because I was able to provide, you know, my family with a really wonderful life, you know, and in a great home, and they went to good schools, and I did that because I made a great living doing daytime television. You know, it was consistent work. I always had a job. So I was able to really provide for my family, and for that I'm thankful, you know.
And
I don't think there isn't anything I'd change, you know. I think, like I said, I'm a big believer in fate, and I think everything that happens for a reason, and my career in daytime, there was a reason for that, and I've raised three wonderfully loving children, and I have a wonderful marriage, and great pets, and a really nice house.
And I sense a big heart, too. You really seem like a really nice person. I mean, and I'm not just saying that because we're doing the interview, but you just seem, I sense a niceness about you. It's got to be there.
Well, thank you. I'm sure there would be people that would argue that point, you know, that I've met over the years. But, you know, everybody has their bad days, too.
Well, why is it? Well, why is it when a woman screams, all of a sudden she's a bitch? You know, why does it always have to be that way?
I know, because that is the way it is. Or they call you diva. When you try to defend yourself, you know, you're a bitch diva.
Right.
You know, so
you're going to do.
That's why I named the book, because I do that tongue in cheek, you know, the whole deep thing, because I hate that word so much that the publishers wanted diva on the cover somewhere, so I put it on there begrudgingly, but I think it works with, you know, with the picture on the cover should have been me with my tongue in my cheek.
Right. So. Let me try to picture that one. I like the cover picture. He just looks so happy.
Thanks. Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, all the hard work you've done and it's paid off, and you're still acting. You're going to do Sunset Boulevard. What else do you hope to do? I mean, are you looking to do other nighttime TV shows? Are there shows you'd like to be on that you've been trying to get on? Or?
Oh, God, there's tons of shows. I mean, everything on Showtime and HBO is so thrilling for me. I'd love to go, you know, and do one of these period things, The Tudors, or I'm reading, God, now I can't think of it. I'm reading Clash of the Kings right now, and the first one was, it was
oh,
just
wow.
on.
George Martin,
on,
George
Martin, what is the name of the series? Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, right. Oh, my.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Rome. You know, I love all those. Those are the shows that I watch.
So how did they react when it's on your resume, you were a soap opera? Is it a good thing or a bad thing to have one for nighttime TV, for cable?
I know my agents have said there are times when they've, you know, I've gone into audition for something, they've been, she's too recognizable as Reva Shane. You know, she can't be a doctor on Grey's Anatomy. You know, I mean, it happens. People have very, they don't have peripheral sight, they have tunnel vision when it comes to somebody who's been on a show as long as I have, you know, or Susan Lucci, or, you know, although, you know, it's Erica Slezak probably won't have trouble finding another job because she's not flamboyant. She's not a flamboyant character.
Right.
You know, people will know her, but she, you know, she wasn't as crazy as an Erica or
I love watching her get angry. I just absolutely love watching Erica Slezak get angry.
And of course, she got to have fun playing the split personalities too. So
yeah, absolutely.
You know that. I know that was fun working with her the day I got to work with Nikki.
And she's really that sweet in real life too.
She's what?
Is she really? I assume she's really sweet in real life.
Oh God, yes. Oh yeah. I mean, she's married to a wonderful man, and again, she has wonderful children. I mean, I know them all. I know her husband Brian very well, and yeah, she's great. She's a salt of the earth there.
Why is it you watch a show and then just one character just stays with you for years and years and years? I remember I sent Judith Light a request.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to get a signed picture of her. I thought, I'll never get a signed picture from her. And did I not get one in the mail one day? Here it comes, and she signed it for me, and I was like moved beyond anything. I mean, I just thought, well, she'll just ignore it. I'll never even hear from her.
Because I'm terrible with that. I have never responded to a piece of fan mail.
Is that right?
Yeah, because it was a decision I made years ago that if I couldn't answer it myself, I wasn't going to hire someone else to sit a stack of pictures in front of me and have me sign them and then have a form letter sent. If I couldn't answer them all personally, I wasn't going to do it.
I'm going to write to Erica and see if she'll send me a signed picture.
She will. And she'll send you a note, too, because that's the kind of woman she is.
Oh, now I can't wait to write to her. Now I can't wait to write.
I will.
I definitely will. What do you think people are going to like most about the book? Tell me some of the things that you think people are really going to relate to. I mean, I just thought the whole thing was fascinating to read from beginning to end. But what do you think?
I'm hoping that they'll enjoy, like you said, the narrative. It was very important for me to have the book have the sense that I was just sitting down with everyone individually, and that it was just a conversation. That I wasn't trying to preach. I wasn't trying to teach. I wasn't trying to, say that my word was gold. I really wanted it to have the sense that it was just a conversation between whoever's reading it and me. And that was important to me, and it was important that I get that across with Laura, my co-writer as well. And I spent a lot of time making the decision to hire her because it wasn't a difficult decision, because the moment I met her, I felt a bond with her that she really understood. She got my voice, and she had my sense of humor, and so I did a lot of the most of the stuff I wrote longhand on legal pads,
right.
And she would just put it in proper grammar, and she would and she'd add some humor, and we were just a really good team.
Right. I think she may have been one of the reasons I got this interview. Thank God for her, because I wrote to her and she wrote back to me immediately. And next thing I know, I had written to your publicist and they wrote back to me. Right. I say, how about next Monday at 10 o'clock? I'm like, what? I haven't even read the book yet. Then I had to do it. I wrote back to her and I said, we have to figure out a good time for this, because I really want to do this.
I'm so glad. Well, it's been a real wonderful time talking to you, too.
Right. I can talk all night to you. That's the problem. We just go on and on and on and on. And I want everybody to read the book. Kim Zimmer, I'm just saying, 3 deaths, 7 husbands. You really had 7 husbands on the show?
Well, I was, yes, 7 husbands. I was married, 11 times, but 3 times to the same man.
Wow. I wonder what Erica Kane's up to. She's got to be past you by now, I would think.
Yeah, I think she's 14 or something.
That's just
she's
insane.
Around there somewhere.
And a clone. Yeah. My life is a daytime diva. That's the rest of it. It's been such a pleasure, Kim. You are such a wonderful, sweet person.
Thank you. It's been a great time. I really appreciate it.
And this has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.